Hello and welcome to the Bright Minds podcast. This is our first ever episode. It is the 9th of April, 2019. My name is Dewa De Boer. I am the editor of Bright Minds, ZNZ. And with me is Jesse Anderson, and I'm going to let him introduce himself.
According to a recent article I just read, all I am is an anti-UN activist, so...
That's a whole lot less colourful than the list of adjectives they normally put in front of my name.
What's up for discussion today is free speech. We've obviously got Andrew Little last week announcing that he'll be fast-tracking a review into quote-unquote hate speech laws for New Zealand. We obviously have the gun control legislation that's been that is still before Parliament as we record this, just passed its second reading. And we also have various other related threats to democracy to discuss, such as all of this legislation from Emotion, all of this bandwagoning to quickly, as quickly as possible, while emotions are running high and while there is an emotional response, to be able to pass a whole bunch of legislation off the backs of a terrorist attack, of course, which is the worst aspect of a... You could say mob rule, but we're a little bit beyond that, where we have politicians who are simply acting because they can, because now is the right opportunity.
It's advanced far beyond mob rule. It's turned into, I'm not sure if it was mob rule. I think it was more like politicians and media just directing the mob. I mean, there's always going to be a lot of emotions when something like Christchurch happens. And obviously they can never let a good tragedy go to waste. And as David Seymour said today, it's obvious why they're ramming through legislation, which, a couple of months ago would have been quite alarming for a lot of people and is alarming for most of us. But for the masses, it's not so it wouldn't have been so alarming, but it would have been more alarming. But it's less objectionable now because this tragedy has happened. And it's a lot easier for them. And we see this happen all the time. We saw it happen after 9/11. We see it happen after every...
The Patriot Act that has been plaguing the United States since then, which was essentially legislation that should have been unconstitutional, and it got rammed through. And that's basically the model that we're following here in New Zealand is, hey, we've got an opportunity to pass legislation that we would not have been able to pass last month. And this likely is legislation that they wouldn't be able to pass in 6 months if everyone had a chance to think about things. This legislation would never get through 6 months from now.
And the rhetoric that we hear from people like Gora's, what is it, Gaharaman?
Gora's Gaharaman.
Gaharaman. It's exactly the same rhetoric that we were getting from her after the whole Molyneux Southern banning of them. When she literally said no human right is absolute. I mean, isn't she a human rights lawyer or something to that degree? No lawyer should be saying no human right is absolute, because that could just be spun so magnificently.
Exactly. And the way that she speaks, if you listen to her in Parliament as well, you wonder how she ever held up as a lawyer, because of the kinds of things that she says, especially around all of this free speech, hate speech discussion. This is the kind of rhetoric that would not pass in a courtroom, and clearly it's the kind of rhetoric that works well when you are trying to get votes from a specific block of people. Then that's where that kind of rhetoric works.
Yeah. See, this newsroom article. Gaharaman believes New Zealanders are capable of determining what is and isn't hate speech. Well, great. So why do we need to legislate it? Why can't free market just decide what it does and does not want to listen to and does and does not want to take under consideration? I mean, it's literally saying New Zealanders are too dumb. To pass legislation like this is saying New Zealanders are too dumb and too untrustworthy to be allowed to say and think what they want to, because they might accidentally do the wrong thing and the wrong saying stuff.
And the example she always gives, and I'm looking here at this article as well, and I'll read it out for people. And the examples that she gives here are basically examples of things that are inflammatory or offensive, but she's suggesting with hate speech legislation, basically you should go to jail for this. So the lines that she's got here, she says, it would be fine to go, I think we're taking in too many refugees. What about our own housing crisis? That's fine. But to come in and go, refugees are rapists? or Muslims beat their women, that's quite different. And so she basically says, if you say refugees are rapists, you should be prosecuted and go to jail. Now, it might be a false statement to make, it might be an insensitive statement to make, it might be a hateful statement to make, but she is suggesting that you should go to jail, that you should be prosecuted by the police for saying something like, Muslims beat their women or refugees are rapists.
Basically, it's just saying you should be prosecuted for being wrong. I personally don't believe that refugees, like, quote-unquote, refugees are rapists, and I don't believe that all Muslims beat their women.
Exactly. And then there will be levels of nuance that will be applied to say, ah, yes, but you said that some, you know, like now we get into the discussion. Okay, well, if you said something like some refugees are rapists, you would be making an objectively factual statement, but this would still be considered to be a hateful statement. Would it still be considered to be a criminal statement under hate speech?
Well, we know that for a fact, all men are rapists, and
that's not hate speech though. That's 50, fine to
50% say. 50% of refugees are men, and so we come to the conclusion, you know, and we know that all men are wife beaters or potential wife beaters, and
all gun owners are terrorists, right?
Yeah, all gun owners are terrorists. All white people are racist. All white people are privileged. That's all fine. See, those are obviously not going to be prosecutable statements.
Exactly, and I would say, oh yeah, those things are. I mean, the people who are saying these things, they're being hateful. What do I care, right? It's perfectly within their rights to be hateful. It's perfectly within their rights to say these things that are wrong, and it's perfectly within our rights to laugh at them, to make fun of them, to, you know, take their statements and show people the truth and show people that they're lying. But to suggest that people should be prosecuted and go to prison, that is quite another level of crazy. That's probably the best way to describe it. It's crazy and quite malicious, in that basically you have a subjective standard under which you can now prosecute your political enemies.
And the insanity of all these, and it is the left, it's not the right, it is the left who are calling for hate speech laws. And the insanity of it all is that they're going to do the exact same thing that happened when Trump got into power and all these liberals were saying, oh no, President Trump has all this power, why does he have so much power? And it's like, well, because you guys gave it to Obama and you thought Obama was going to be president forever. So they don't think about what happens when the next party gets in and decides, well, actually, I'm going to use these laws to do some quite malicious things and silence any opposition. They don't think that far ahead. They just think, and it is obviously an emotional reaction, because emotion is temporary. But facts and logic are forever. Thanks, Ben Shapiro.
That's right. Facts don't care about your feelings. It's Ben Shapiro's greatest line. And that's exactly what they're afraid of, and why a lot of their policies have to rely on people's emotions. So they need to pass their policies in times of heightened emotion, because these policies don't stand up to the facts.
We've known that for a long time. I mean, Jacinda Ardern campaigned on emotion and feel goods. I mean, it's obvious. She's just been campaigning on kindness and all these sorts of things. And kindness is good, but sometimes you have to be cruel to be kind, and sometimes you have to. And we're sort of getting off the free speech subject with this, but it's like, you know, the whole left-wing policy of dishing out money to people and just giving things away for free and making things really easy, and it turns people into weak, you know...
dependent. It creates dependency.
Yeah, it creates dependency. And it's the same thing as the parent who just gives their kid whatever they want, whenever they want, and then that kid grows up to be useless because they never had to do without. And they can't handle not doing without. And I'm not sure how this is related to hate speech. But I'm probably saying some hate speech right now. This is probably somewhat prosecutable under Gollriz's utopian dream of... I don't understand the... what do you hope to achieve other than throwing people in prison and fining them for saying the wrong thing? Like, do you really think people are just going to... Well, it's illegal to say hate speech now, so I guess I'll just stop being racist.
Exactly, and all you have to do is look at countries that actually have these laws. You can look at what happens in the UK, where people get investigated for all kinds of bizarre things, you know, where you've had Count Dankula nearly imprisoned for making his pug do Nazi salutes as a joke.
Very funny joke, by the way.
And, And you've got people investigated for liking the wrong tweets on Twitter, and it just gets more and more insane.
We have that here. We have people being visited by the police and NZSIS. I know several people who have been personally visited by NZSIS for being related to certain groups, for speaking freely, for speaking their what they believe, for Islamophobic comments, exactly. Etc.
And if you do say something that's racist or hateful about a certain religion, that does not mean you should get a visit from the police. And it's incredibly concerning that the police are spending a lot of time paying visits to people for saying offensive things on the internet. That's the level of a police state where we're supposed to be heightened terror alert, and instead the police are paying visits and the security services are paying visits to people who are quite obviously not terrorists, because somebody who's saying stuff on the internet on a public forum without actually talking about violence is not the kind of person that's going to go out and commit an act of terrorism, right? That's probably never... I'm trying to think of an example of someone who was basically out in the public saying things like that.
Yeah, this is actually a conversation that I had with
imprisoned.
A friend the
it's
other all, day.
It's the people you don't know about.
It's... Name one mass shooter that had a high public profile before they did the shooting, and I couldn't think of a single one. Because they don't exist as far as I know. Maybe Osama bin Laden, but didn't he...
Well, he was a mastermind. He didn't commit the terrorism
and
himself.
And he didn't come out and say it until after the thing happened anyway.
Yeah,
so exactly. it's really foolish to think that laws like this could have prevented some foreign Australian backpacker coming here and buying some guns and shooting some people. I mean, as far as we know, he didn't have a public presence. He didn't know anybody. Nobody knew him as far as we're aware. If someone did know him, then it would have been in the media by now if they had been arrested for having, association with this dude beforehand.
Exactly. The full investigation is obviously still ongoing. But the fact that information hasn't come out tells you that he basically did not have any kind of meaningful internet presence. He wasn't the kind of guy who was posting stuff under his own name where the police knew that he lived. Posting stuff that was quote unquote hateful, this is not the general impression that you get of someone who is a terrorist, and when you have police investigating this, it should really worry you, because, well, what are they not investigating? Where could they be spending their time better? When you've got things like 10% of robberies are actually solved, when you have police not actually even attending the scene of crimes of firearms theft. If your firearms are stolen, there's no guarantee the police will even turn up to inspect the location. And I think that goes for all burglaries, not just firearms burglaries. And they have such a low resolution rate there. And basically now you're going to end up with a case where the police are tasked to go and look at people saying the wrong thing online.
And on top of all of that, laws like this are only going to serve to persecute the people who, already not even laws, but just the general feeling of the general vibe of the whole situation has driven police to start interviewing and investigating, people for the crime of being right wing. I mean, all this is doing is...
You are posting while right wing.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, we're now shutting down this music event because somebody had a right-wing tattoo.
And it's literally persecution. What you're doing is you're persecuting people who you're scared of being radicalized. So, I mean, do you see how that's kind of a really stupid thing to do, is to start persecuting people who you're scared of maybe being radicalized? I mean, all you're doing is
pushing people underground, essentially.
Further radicalization.
And
you're pushing people into the arms of people like the Dominion Movement, where, got nowhere else to turn to, you've got nowhere else to go, your family and your friends don't like you anymore because you're too right-wing, and they heard that right-wing people are Nazis, so who are you going to go to? Obviously, the only people who will accept you for quote-unquote who you are.
Let's move on to...
Yeah, we could talk about a little bit more of the gun control laws. I'm not a huge gun guy. I've always been of the persuasion that guns are... What's the word? It's not a... It's a right, it's not a privilege.
That's something that we've been hearing a lot in the gun debate and listening to Parliament to say, owning a firearm is not a right, it's a privilege in New Zealand. And yeah, that's the way that New Zealand law basically puts it, but that's not the way that it is in natural law. Is the right to own the means of your own self-defense is a natural right. It is what we would call a God-given right to defend yourself. And the overall, and of course that's what's enshrined in the United States Constitution, but we don't have that in New Zealand, and they get taken into this thing of, oh well, we can ban this and we can ban that because it's not a right to own it. And that's, I don't want to say slippery slope, but you're undermining the very principle of why people should be allowed to own certain things and do certain things, especially if they're not harmful to them, to themselves or to anyone else. Right, owning a firearm is intrinsically not harmful to anyone else. It's intrinsically not harmful to yourself. And so you can't make, they make this argument from public safety, but the only risk to public safety comes from abuse. The risks risk to public safety from anything else comes from abuse as well, right? If you own a knife, or if you own a car, or if you own any one of 100
other ingredients. Why do you need a high capacity vehicle at all? You know, those things are just terribly dangerous, and really we should all be driving little Toyota Starlets.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking they had a high death toll on the roads, and some people don't like the comparison to cars, but here we go. We had a high death toll on the roads where, since in the last month, we've had, you know, we're getting up to the death toll of the Christchurch massacre in terms of road deaths. And one of these was a van of seven people killed them. You could say, well, if only they had been driving vehicles that were smaller, and they had been two in a vehicle at a time, then we'd have less casualties, basically.
And theoretically, on paper, that would work.
And that would work, right? But it's an insanely dumb argument to make.
It's ridiculous.
Because when we come to mass murder, okay, well, what was one of the attacks that this was supposedly a revenge attack for was Nice, right? Well, somebody took a truck and drove through a crowd of people, killing 70 people and wounding 500 people with a truck, okay?
It was a lot easier, and it was a lot quicker than what the Christchurch dude did.
And we've got 9/11, where a bunch of guys with some box cutters hijacked some planes, 3,000 people. And you can go on and on, stabbings, bombings, shootings, whatever it is. When you're listening to Parliament and when they're doing this, they're saying, well, we are trying to make sure that people don't get shot in mass numbers again. So, but you're not making anybody safer.
No.
You're simply changing the way that people die. And this is what happened in, if you look at the stats for Australia, because Australia did a semi-automatic ban, so we kind of have their numbers. You look at violent crime rate, you look at overall numbers of deaths throughout the years, they didn't go down, or at least not faster than they were trending, and so on. So you're not actually changing, you're not actually decreasing the number of people that are dying. You're not increasing public safety. You are simply either spreading out these events into smaller sections, just like my car example, where, okay, we'll put people into smaller cars and then less people die in one go. But you're not actually increasing the overall safety.
No, and the guy said himself, you know, I could have chosen to use bombs, I could have chosen to use a truck, I could have blah, 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 but I chose to use firearms to bring the debate into the public light.
Exactly, yep. And that's why we're having this debate, because that's what he wanted. He wanted
literally us to be doing what the terrorists wanted.
Exactly. And one of the other things I heard in Parliament as well was something like, oh, well, the main thing is the high capacity. It's not for all firearms. We're not going to ban all firearms. It's just the high capacity. It's just because these people all got murdered and they didn't have a chance. They didn't have a chance to, you know, to do something or get away, because he could keep shooting for an extended
period of time. They didn't have a chance to shoot back,
either. And that's what I was thinking. I was thinking they didn't have a chance to shoot back. Because the one thing is, if somebody comes in with a truck, you got no chance. If someone comes in with a bomb, you've got no chance. Somebody comes with a gun, you got a chance.
You do have a chance.
If you have a gun,
you've
got a chance.
Easily.
And this is what makes shootings avoidable.
It happens all the time in the States. All the time. There are so many more lives saved.
We have the official FBI stats. I could bring them up, but I could link them if anybody was interested. The official stats from the US government, which says that firearms are far more likely to be used in self-defense than they are used to cause a crime, and so on. I come back to the original point, which is, what we see time and time again is that the level of crime is not reduced. London, in the UK, they have more stabbings, more people are murdered every day and every year. Well, acid attacks. You have all other kinds of attacks because people get creative and people find other ways and sometimes even more effective ways. For instance, like the car bombings and car drivers can actually end up being more effective, and people get creative and find new ways to cause destruction and mayhem. In the UK, in London, this year or the last year, they had a higher murder rate than New York City. And New York City, they've got lots of guns. In London, they don't have any guns. What's happening? People are getting stabbed. It's talking about acid attacks. You've got the UK police now. We talked about policing speech and, you know, the police getting visits from the police for having for saying the wrong things online, for liking the wrong tweets. In the UK, if you got a knife on you, you get that confiscated by the police.
If you have a potato peeler on you.
Yep, that's right. If stores leave knives out in the open, that's a crime. All the knives, like I'm talking kitchen knives, like steak knives, have to be locked away in cabinets.
Did you see the article? They had a bin for surrendering knives, and it got stolen, and someone just stole all the knives.
Yeah, that's right. I remember seeing that story. They knife surrender bin, because that's what you have when there are no more guns. Then suddenly it's the knives, and so, oh hey everyone, can you surrender your knives, please? And of course, the police are a bit incompetent with their firearms currently. Their firearms get stolen all the time, and then now, okay, well, you know, we're collecting all the knives, and somebody's like, oh, that's great, I'll take those knives, thank you very much. And then you see these pictures of them hauling in these, you know, they say, oh, we did stop and search, and we got all of these weapons. And there's screwdrivers. There are pitchforks.
Pliers.
And all other kinds of garden tools and workman tools that get confiscated because they're all potential weapons, right? Potential weapons, because they have the potential to cause harm, and they are now the most dangerous things in the UK, right? Having a sharpened screwdriver is considered a serious threat in the UK because that's just about the most dangerous thing that you're allowed to own. If you were a bit shocked when I said pitchforks before, yes, we have, it's up on the Right Minds website somewhere from a couple of months ago. Get in touch with me if you want me to send you the picture. The police confiscated a pitchfork from a member of the public in London. So if you were thinking of getting really mad at all of this and grabbing your pitchfork and marching on Parliament, In a few years you won't be able to anymore. They will confiscate your pitchfork, just like they confiscate your pitchfork in the UK today.
And the arguments that I've been hearing from the, and I hate to say normies, but this is the only thing that I, people who are politically inactive or disinterested. I've been hearing, but why would you need a gun like that? Why would you need a gun like that? And that's, to me, that is such privileged thinking, to think that
your privilege.
In no time in the next 50 to 100 years could there possibly be another Mao or another Stalin or another...
Exactly, and we don't own firearms in New Zealand. You're not allowed to own firearms for self-defense. People don't own firearms for self-defense. You're not allowed to own firearms to overthrow your government. But, you know, even England has a tradition of the people overthrowing tyrannical governments.
A little bit of revolution
just
now and then.
Every now and then, every couple of hundred years. You never know. You never know if there's going to be another war. You never know if there's going to be a foreign invasion. You never know what could happen. And this was actually something that happened to Mike Loader in the Select Committee. He was questioned. He was grilled on this. They said, you said that firearms were essential tools for preserving liberty. And he was a little bit confused. Said, yeah, you uploaded a picture of dead Jews hanging out of ovens with the caption saying, you know, Hitler confiscated firearms from the Jews, and Mao confiscated firearms from the Chinese, and Pol Pot confiscated firearms, and so on, and all of the, and
you know,
all these massacres.
I really laughed when I heard them saying that, because I was like, aren't you guys making your own bed right now? Like,
basically, and there are, you can find the actual legislation passed by all of these dictators, and when, I'm not saying that's what's happening right now, and Mike Loader had the perfect comeback to this when they made this accusation. He said, yes, that's all true. I'm not sure what that has to do with this bill, but it's all true.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the point, is that you have no idea what's going to happen in the future. And simply saying, oh, look, the government loves us, that's what you're thinking now. And one day, potentially in the future, you might not be thinking that. And there may be other needs that you haven't thought about now. And even the government itself may be withdrawn into resistance and so on. And then suddenly, hey, actually having a bunch of firearms are going to be super useful when it comes to resisting tyranny.
It's also a question of national security. I mean, the famous line from the, I can't remember his name and I can't remember what his position was, but from the Japanese guy back ages when, he said, you can't invade the US mainland because there's just too many flipping guns there. You won't do it.
Yeah, something like there is a gun behind every blade of grass.
Every blade of grass.
Yep. I love tongue twisters.
Yep.
Oh, if he hadn't been able to have this gun, this wouldn't have happened. That's simply not true.
You would have used a different gun.
That is simply not true. And the discussion they could have and should have been having is, how do we find these kinds of people? How do we stop these kinds of people from having guns? And how do we stop these kinds... But even further than that, because that doesn't get to the root of the problem, how do we stop these people from wanting to murder a bunch of people in the first place?
And the obvious answer for that is to just ban the ability to think about killing people.
Exactly. Only we had a law against wrong think.
It is now illegal to kill Muslims.
That's right. If we had a law against killing Muslims, none of this would ever have happened.
Mm.
If only we had a law. If we had a law against thinking about it, we'd be getting one step further back.
Yeah, and as far as I'm aware, I've never heard or seen anybody talking about killing Muslims or even thinking about it. So it's not like a hate speech law would have prevented.
And if it were there, if there are people who are talking about killing or any group of people, where are they on the internet? What are you going to do? Ban the internet? I'm giving them ideas.
Don't go give them ideas. I'm
sorry. They will try. Yeah. But that's the point, right? You will move further and further away, and they're not addressing the root cause of evil, of human evil, that it exists, and that they are creating the kind of culture, they are creating the kind of value system, and the nihilism that they support in their worldview that supports this kind of thinking.
Well, this is what I've called for a long time Band-Aid politics, where it's you find this little problem and you just slap a quick fix on it instead of getting to the root cause of it. This is left-wing politics, 101, is you never address the root cause because you know that the root cause is just something way too huge and politicians could never fix it because politicians are incompetent.
And you can't fix the root problem of human evil completely.
No, you can try and mitigate it, but you'll never be able to do it. And you certainly won't be able to do it with any policy that any of the left or any right-wing centrist, whatever. But politicians cannot fix human evil.
Mm-hmm.
Society
can reduce it, and if you had a society with good moral values, mm-hmm. if I may have the audacity to suggest, for instance, that society were to return to the Bible, to Christian values.
That hate speech.
That's right. I can't say that. I'm going to jail now, and you won't have the solution to the problem of human evil. Don't forget to subscribe to PewDiePie after this podcast.
Oh, that's definitely hate speech. Do you mean subscribe to beep?
So definitely do that. And also don't forget to subscribe to the Right Minds YouTube channel. Subscribe to all of the places where you're going to find the Right Minds podcast. Add the Right Minds website to your RSS feed. Subscribe to our newsletter. Follow the Facebook page. And if you're on Minds or Gab or Instagram, I think, then be sure to drop us a like or a follow. And
also start talking about it. Start talking about Minds and Gab so that people don't think that, oh, it's just this thing that people talk about sometimes, but they never actually do. Like, start talking about it like it's an actual thing. Because if you want people to join it and, like, join this MeWe thing that I've been invited to join, and I joined and...
There's nobody on there.
The thing is, you've got to start all over again, you know? I've got to find all these people have them out there.
It doesn't work, and you've got critical mass issues. Yeah. And a lot of people just quit social media altogether because they leave Facebook and they realize, hey, wait a minute, I don't actually need this in my life.
No.
And so don't worry too much about it. If you're not there, you'll be able to follow along on the website, like I said, on the mailing list. And by listening to this podcast, you can follow along with what we're doing as well. Let's talk about the Anzac Day parades.
Surprise, bonus.
bonus news.
Bonus topic.
Okay, so one last thing we can talk about now is, and this ties together into absolutely everything else that we've just been talking about, is that you've had news over the last few days that Anzac Day parades are being cancelled because of the police, who are keeping you safe. They're doing a very good job of keeping you safe. Don't worry, you'd never need to keep yourself safe. They're telling you that they can't protect you. I mean, they're keeping you safe, but they can't protect all the different Anzac parades, like, all at once, because there's not enough of them and they don't have enough resources because they're too busy visiting people's houses for saying the wrong things online. And so they don't want people spread out, and they want people all together in one big place so they can protect you with bollards from the trucks of peace and... anybody else who might wish to cause you harm.
Yeah, you know, it's so strange. We've had all of this white supremacy and all of this bigotry in New Zealand for such a long time. It's just been a cesspit of white supremacy, but we've never, ever had a terrorist alert threat surrounding the Anzac Day parades. I mean, I wonder really where these threats are coming from and what could be the reason.
I wouldn't possibly know, and it can't at all be related to 2 years ago. I did a radio appearance on the Leighton Smith show, and I mentioned these Anzac Day parades in Australia that were getting cancelled. This was 2 years ago. Because they couldn't afford the $10,000 police protection fee to keep their Anzac Day parade safe. And so they were starting to scale back Anzac Day parades and services in Australia. And I brought this up and I said, hey, if we don't do something in New Zealand now, we're going to run into some issues. And I was actually criticized by people who were like, oh, you know, that's Australia. Don't talk about Australia. This is New Zealand. We don't want to hear about Australia.
Yeah, they're white supremacists.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, guess what? Here we are now. One Australia. All it took was one Australian to basically just, like, destroy New Zealand and bring our entire society to its knees. Because that's our government is more than happy to comply with absolutely everything that he wanted. And now we're moving on to the whole thing of, yeah, the government is going to keep you safe, except they can't keep you safe. They can never keep you safe. You're going to get used to being on this high terror alert. The police doing routine traffic stops, I saw them the other day, I've been walking past them for the last couple of days, all of them armed to the teeth, doing routine traffic stops, breathalyzing people, checking their licenses. They're still armed. Why are they still armed? Because apparently they're on, you know, amber alert or orange alert, as they call it. Even though I've been told by a friend in the army who says that they're not actually on orange alert. But clearly someone at the top brass is encouraging the police to be armed. So you're moving into a situation like in Australia where they banned all of their guns. All of these dangerous guns were banned, but the police are more armed than ever before.
Yeah, that's something that actually really bothers me. And I hate to sound conspiratorial or anything like that, but I consider it a form of tyranny when the government says you cannot have these weapons, but we can.
Exactly.
You are not allowed to have anything near like the firepower that we have. Why? Well, we can't say. But
well, somebody might you know, misuse it.
Somebody might misuse it.
The government would never misuse it.
Definitely not a police officer or an army official or anybody like that. It would never ever happen ever in history in any country ever.
That's right, because they're perfect. And
in any country that it has happened, well, we're just better than those people.
That's
right.
It's like socialism, that we're going to get it right this time, and we're not going to murder millions of people by doing it because the other guys just got it wrong.
And we're not incredibly arrogant to think that we are the only ones that could bring about this perfect utopia, because it's never been tried before. All those guys were just goofing around. They weren't trying to bring about anything like what we're trying to bring about.
Exactly. So yeah, so you're basically being warmed up to the idea of now living on this heightened terror alert for the rest of your life, where the police will be given more and more stop and search powers. The privacy is gone. You'll get the American TSA at the airports, where they let through 96% of all weapons get let through by the TSA when they ran internal testing.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll have something similar in New Zealand, because it'll make people feel safer. And that's, again, they'll, you know, as we talked about before, they'll ban whatever percentage of guns to make people feel safer. Won't actually make them be safer, because there's every other way of murdering people that's ever been invented. And then there's also every other way of murdering people that hasn't yet been invented.
I'm looking forward to those ones.
We're talking about this now, but I've given these examples from other countries. We've seen it all happen before, and we're seeing it happen to all of these other countries. We don't want to go down that path. New Zealand should not go down that path, and New Zealanders only need to have a look at what is happening in these European countries, especially in the UK. Look at what's happening in Australia and to a certain extent the USA, and just say, look, we don't want to go there. They have not solved terrorism. They've still got the same number of terrorist attacks that they've been having forever, perhaps more terrorist attacks than ever before. It doesn't work, and we don't want to go down this path. That will just lead to more and more government power. And even the lefties who support this, well, they're going to, you know, the jackboot eventually comes down on everyone. And
well,
there's no way. There is no way to escape. There is no way to escape, for lack of a better word, the police state. And I think I could close all of my statements with a quote from Benjamin Franklin, who said, "Those who would trade liberty for security deserve neither liberty nor security."
Well said. Yeah, I would like just to go back to the Anzac Day parade just for 1 second and just encourage people to attend your local Dawn Parade or Anzac Day event. I think it's more important now than ever, because we've had our Anzac Day events come under threat. And the idea of having an Islamic prayer at the Anzac, I mean, how foolish are you? I mean, you've already got our parliament, leave our Anzac Day alone, you know? I mean, how could you not think that it would stir up so much anger and resentment towards the Islamic community to see an Islamic prayer? I mean, can you tell me how many Muslims would have been Anzacs? I can kind of guess how many there would have been. These were Christian men that went overseas and died. Some came back, some didn't. And I'm pretty sure that most of them would be pretty annoyed to know that we're just going to, you know, use their day as a virtue signaling attempt to, you know, try That's and right. bring some fake sense of unity that nobody's vibing with.
No, exactly. And there was a great opportunity for a sense of unity after what happened in Christchurch. And there was initially, to me, and I think to probably everyone else, was initially that sense of unity and that sense that we were all attacked. And now, well, it took 48, 72 hours for everything to descend into identity politics and saying, oh, what, how can we insert this meaningless gesture into this aspect and annoy these people, and how can we go after these other people who are unrelated, and running around in circles blaming people and just in general messing with people's beliefs and values and things that people treasure. And it was a perfect opportunity to actually bring people together in unity and say, hey, they're part of New Zealand, the Muslim community is part of New Zealand. They're New Zealanders like the rest of us, and we're all New Zealanders, and we're not going to be divided up into these little groups, and we're not going to go running around saying, ooh, the Crusaders need to change their name. Ooh, we need to play the Islamic prayer in Parliament, and then throughout all of New Zealand, and then on the Anzac Day parades, and ooh, looking for changes to make, right? Looking for changes to make, which is exactly what you don't want to be doing in the wake of a terrorist attack, because then people feel like you're using a tragedy, or in the words of Simon Bridges, so he referred to Ara Moana, past tragedy, as a missed opportunity, and that's what he would basically say this is. If you don't implement all of these changes, it's a quote-unquote missed opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty disgusting thing to be doing, and that is how you create division and animosity and basically they're stirring up anti-Muslim hatred by saying, ooh, we need to change all of these things because of the Muslims.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? People are going to hate Muslims if you do that.
And for instance, for example, we don't, if someone loses a loved one, you know, they lose their spouse, they lose their child, we don't generally allow them to make huge financial decisions when they're in the first couple of days or even weeks of grieving, because they're not thinking clearly. They want to throw all their money away at something or whatever. We don't allow them to do that because We need to do logical problems when we're thinking logical things when we're thinking logically, and we need to do emotional things when we're thinking emotionally. So you need to mourn, and you need to cry, and you need to pray, but you don't need to start chucking in legislation right away.
Don't give huge amounts of power to someone who's emotional. And if you are emotional, now is not the time to be thinking, ooh, what drastic changes can I make that I'm going to regret later?
Yeah.
Thank you everyone for listening. That's the end of our first ever episode. We hope you've enjoyed all of the different perspectives that Jesse and I have brought to the show, if it has been the same perspective or not. We may find some more issues that we have less agreement on in the future, but I'm glad that we've been on the same page here for most of it. And obviously, these are some pretty big issues and some pretty heavy issues that have come together this week, and things will happen, and the show will develop along with current events and the news. We're committing to doing this weekly, so you should get a new episode every week and different topics every week, and we're looking to doing different things, different styles of conversation. We're looking to bringing in other people, doing interviews, and so on, everything that you could expect from a good podcast. As I've said before, don't forget to go to the website www.rightminds.nz, add the website to your RSS feed, subscribe to our YouTube channel, add this podcast to your podcast reader, like our Facebook, Twitter, Minds, Gab, whichever social media you use. And if you don't use any social media at all, make sure to sign up for our mailing list, and we will keep in touch with you. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.